Thank you very much, Naoko. I'm very pleased to be giving the comments to our three presenters. I found all the papers quite intriguing and raised some questions on my, for me. And I guess what I want to do is to put some of these questions on the table and maybe provoke other questions from the audience, right? But mainly, a lot of these are my own questions about the nature of what was presented. Madhu's presentation on our money, our accountability is it's a narrative about quite a real achievement, right? And in a sense, it's a narrative about putting agency into a kind of social program in which agency is not supposed to be important. You know, the agency of the poor are supposed to be the subjects of such an intervention. So what we have is what I take from the from her presentation is that in Delhi there is a set of achievements, and she has explained to us that actually in the rest of India this is not this is not filtered through, right? And actually the other thing I found quite interesting in her presentation, and this is because of where I sit, right? That the achievements of the Congress Party or the previous government, in the current government too, in the end have to do nothing to do with their economic management, but with respect to two programs that are pro-poor, right? That are officially pro-poor. So the question that it raises up to me, and maybe she can discuss this, if you want. I mean, to the extent that she can, and I'm not sure that she was very careful about the way she reported it. To what extent can you spread this through the whole nation, right? And are there any channels in which this can be done? Here in the United States, or many activists actually feel that the moment something gets into the media, then it can be reproduced elsewhere. It can be done again. Same place. So actually, what I would like to ask Madhu to talk about are in a sense, questions that have to do with this kind of question of how to do the same thing elsewhere and how to, to use a technocratic term, how to scale it up, right? One is, perhaps you can tell us more about the process of this movement that she herself was involved in. Was there any internal resistance from the beneficiaries, and what kind of resistance was there, right, from the people who ended up getting organized? I have experiences of, starting from cold thing, and how do you start it, right? It's not as if everybody in the slum area would be for this kind of first of all, a claim on time, but also, a claim on their comfort level, where it is already on an issue that's quite political, right? So, the other thing is, in the particular organization that she was involved with, to what extent is it sustainable, or how is it being sustained, or how was it being sustained when the victory was not yet there, right? Is there is there an attempt to have regular meetings? Were there other activities actually that the women were involved in aside from this very political? I have these questions because of aside from this very political activity that they were involved in, right? And I find it quite interesting that that this happens, right? It's not straightforward even among middle class wealthy people, right? It's not an easy thing to do. My comments to Sarah Tsu, her paper is about the response. For me, the most interesting part of the paper is the question of responding to the economic crisis, how the government responded to the economic crisis. First, maybe I should say that she identifies the two things that are quite important with respect to how the crisis is going to be seen on the ground. One is the gender gaps, gender imbalances, and the other one is the idea of the question of minorities in many of these production systems. She makes a good point that, it's one of those things that we always say, and it's something that I think we should think about more, that that China needs a strong growth rate to maintain its poverty reduction objectives. My question to that, and I mean, it's not a question to her, but it's a question to everybody. I mean, why a strong growth rate? Why not worry about redistribution first and all that stuff, right? The other thing that is part of her narrative is this role of remittances in other areas, right? What is the economic role? What is the social role of remittances? So my questions come from this sort of my own reconstruction of what she presented, right? And Sarah says that the fiscal stimulus that the Chinese government have implemented seem to have succeeded, okay? So I want to ask questions about that. To what extent is, what is the proportion of the fiscal stimulus that has actually been spent in the local area, and what has been spent in the urban area so that the remittances can continue to flow, right? I mean, that's one question. The other question is whether or not where it was spent. Did women get specially targeted in the design of this stimulus package? It seems to, I get the impression that a lot of it has to do with infrastructure spending, right? And that's a contentious issue even in the United States, right? I mean, to what extent can infrastructure spending absorb women's labor or provide additional income on women's labor, right? And to what extent does it really make up for remittances that rural families had counted on, right? Those are basically, I mean, it's a set of questions, a question of how this thing works, right? At the local area, and it's a great interest to everybody, right? I mean, because this is Obama's problem, right? He even has a website, right, about how this stimulus money is being spent. So that's the kind of problem that is true in all the countries. In the case of Obola's paper, I was very struck about, that she started off with the way in which colonial relations had fundamentally or permanently changed the role of women in agriculture from what she calls the custodians of the food system, right? Because of the reorientation of the whole agricultural system towards serving the markets of in the metropolitan countries, and she talks about and this is something that I will always remember. She talks about chronic food crisis versus the current acute crisis, and she actually then goes through all the different ways in which this crisis happened. What I found interesting, and I guess this is because she also comes from a commodity exporting region, this issue that exchange rate appreciation actually kills your agricultural production, right? And it limits investment to improve productivity, including in larger scale agricultural production in many of these countries. Okay, so now I let me just go to my questions that perhaps she can answer or perhaps are difficult to answer. One is, I was wondering about the role of infrastructure in agricultural production in Africa. Now, perhaps there is no one answer, right? The question of the fact that African agriculture in general is of a rain-fed style, to what extent can public interventions, actually be more? I don't want to use the word serious. Be more targeted towards providing an improvement to agricultural production through the provision of irrigation services. The second question I had is on the slide that she showed about national responses that might actually worsen. It's just, I just didn't understand it. What is the stance of trade policy in African countries, or is there one, right? You talk about the problem of the pass-through, right, whether there's enough pass-through or not enough pass-through, but you say it's a disincentive for the way the prices are set, right? on the trade policy, it's a disincentive for production and investment in agriculture. You know, it wasn't clear to me what that bullet point meant. The other question I have, this was in a sense brought up partly near the end, is that Africa has a very strong relationship with the donor community, right? And we know, at least here working in New York, that the donor community, at least on the part, not the United States, but at least on the part of the EU, have a very strong gender orientation. Now, I don't know whether it's necessarily seen in the donor community of in the European donor community, right? And maybe they don't have any agricultural programs. I'm very curious to the extent that the ODA, you know, the way the ODA is targeted or the way it's decided how it is going to be used, whether on the ground the European countries actually practice what they preach, right? That, you know, that the kind of ODA they want, they're willing to disburse, you know, is actually have the gender principles that they espouse very strongly here in New York. Another question I have is about the external shock facility. This one is a political question. Why you mentioned that the governments have not taken advantage of the external shock facility, right? For a shock that is happening outside. Why have they stayed with the PRGF, right? Which is a highly conditional facility. Maybe it depends on which country, but I'm really curious about this. Well, you know, it's also where I come from. Where every time I have to write something that said that that agricultural investment had declined, it doesn't come out in my name. It comes out eventually in the Secretary General's reports, right? Every time we try to say that agricultural investment had been constricted in the past before the food crisis, we always get the rejoinder that it was also the local governments that decided that there was no potential for agricultural investment, right? And this is why it's not completely the fault of the Bretton Woods institutions. It's not just their advice that actually caused the problem. But I'd like to know why, in this particular instance, right, why they haven't moved towards the... Maybe is it because the external shock facility is too small, or is it still conditional anyway, or... I really don't know. Yeah. Finally, if you still have time, maybe what I mean, just to understand more or less how agriculture and women are involved in Africa, and this is actually stimulated by your last slide, in which you identify some set of industries which are potential for women farmers, right? I guess the first question I have is why is it only a potential for women farmers, right? What is the is do the women farmers have any specific advantage in the particular industries that you actually identify? That's the advantage of them, and not to male farmers too, right? To what extent is the ownership of assets a factor in Africa, the way assets are distributed and inherited and passed on? To what extent does it have any role in African agriculture and the participation of women in this sector? Thank you very much.